across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
7:06 on this Monday morning. Welcome back to Up North News Radio for this October 16th. This is National Dictionary Day. This is National Bosses Day. This is National Liqueur Day. This is National Feral Cat Day. And so our official feral cat of Up North News Radio, Whiskers, is here along with Selena Heller, Up North News reporter.
Good morning.
Was Whiskers ever feral? Did the Whiskers just like wander in the back door one day? Or
Whiskers was feral. He was found on the side of the highway in Buffalo County.
I was just kidding, but sure enough. All right. Whiskers
He's not feral anymore.
Well, no, really not. Anybody that knows Selena and her young daughter and the pictures of your daughter loves that cat. I mean, loves, like squeezing and the eyeballs look like they're going to pop out. And
yet, always.
And Whiskers comes back for more because Whiskers is like, yeah, or I could be living in a roadside ditch. I will choose the six-year-old every time. So
every time. Yep. We're getting two foster kittens this week. So that's the excitement in the house.
Wait, so you're just going to have them temporarily?
Yes, we there's like apparently a big influx at the shelter now for fall kittens, and so they have a lot. So there's a big need for fosters now. Oh, so all summer we typically get foster kittens, and then we just have them temporarily, and Whiskers sometimes gets along and sometimes doesn't. But so we're getting a couple this week, and so that is our fun.
I feel like we've gotten some insight into Selena's next video story for Up North News. Coming up later this hour, there is a misconception out there that controversial books are in our school libraries and classrooms because of, you know, maybe a lack of oversight or some kind of, you know, nefarious purposes. In fact, educators take great care to select age-appropriate material for classes and recreational reading, and we'll talk to an educator about the process and about the safeguards that are out there when it comes to, you know, reading the things that we do for recreation or for class. Again, that's coming up later this hour. If you missed our last hour, you can catch it anytime by heading over to civicmedia.us, where every hour of our past shows is loaded up and ready to play right off the webpage, or you can subscribe as a podcast right there. You can go to Apple, Spotify, all the normal places, and you can listen that way. Up North News is a separate entity from Civic Media. You find our work at upnorthnewswi.com, and you can catch our newsletter. Just go to upnorthnewswi.com and click newsletter in the top banner, and you'll get things like my editorial today on voucher school proponents cherry-picking data to try to make the schools not look like the waste of taxpayer funds that some folks think that they are, and some of the lighter stories there as well. Again, head to upnorthnewswi.com. Selena works on stories for the newsletter, for the website, for social media. And in taking a look at some of those things, one had somewhat of a personal attachment to you in terms of, again, being in that part of Jackson County where you are. It's not enough that you attract cats, you know, alongside the road. Apparently elk are attracted to your land as well. Is that the case?
Yeah, the farm at home in Black River in Jackson County. So there was elk reintroduced by the DNR years ago in a couple of different spots. So Eastern Jackson County in the Black River State Forest. And somehow one is wandering around the countryside and just hanging out. So my brother has Highland cattle down on the farm, and it jumped the fence probably and just was hanging out with the cattle. And I joked because I thought, well, he would probably think like, what are these little guys? What, these are my new friends, but they're so tiny.
And you see this big radio, it's a radio collar, right? That the elk has on.
Yeah. So they monitor their monitoring collars. It's just a big red collar. So he looks like a reindeer kind of.
Yeah, he does. Well, that was my first thought when I first saw it show up in our Slack channel. I thought, oh, we're getting ready to do some Christmas stories or something like that. And then come to find out it was you, is from family land, and that it's an elk just hanging out with cattle.
Yeah. And my brother thought it, he called one of our other friends and he said, there's this elk in the pasture. And she said, oh, that's so cool. And he's like, not cool. I don't want to feed it all winter.
Yeah. You know what? That's a great point. Yeah. You do end up feeding it otherwise if it hangs around. So
yeah. So it's been there all several days.
Well, clearly it has been doing some wandering and, you know, with any luck, enjoys wandering, is just making a little pit stop, you know, before continuing its migration, because otherwise you have to look, if you're going to end up feeding it, maybe you can, you know, charge people a fee if they come down and want to, you know, be a spectator with it for a while. I don't know. Look for a way to make the best of it.
It's become quite a spectacle. So people are coming, taking videos and pictures. And
well, even on Facebook, how many views on Facebook at this point?
Oh my gosh. Yesterday there was,
was it 45,000?
Yeah, something crazy. Like wow. Everybody is looking at this video. It's really mm-hmm. cool. Yeah, our family friend Lee Suino, he just went out and took this video, and it's just, he got so close and it's just walking around.
Wow, it's very impressive. Head over to the Up North News social media pages, Facebook pages, and you know, you can even comment if you want on what you're seeing there. So let's take a break here. We'll come back. We'll talk about sports. We'll get the details on the weatherology forecast. We'll unpack some more of the news. We'll talk about controversial books. And then later, Civic Media News Director Terry Bell joins us with three things you need to know to start the week. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin, when you're here for those 2 hours every weekday morning, you're up north. It's nice to have you here. Back after this. John Mayer's birthday today, 46, born this day in 1977. It seems like he should be younger than that, but there's the numbers right there. More with Selena Heller coming up in just a bit, but first we want to get the details on what we think is going to be a quiet forecast, at least heading into the start of the week after that very large system moved across us to start the weekend, made everything wet and cloudy. It was nice to see the sun finally start to come peeking out from time to time. So let's see what it's going to look like for the first part of the work week now. Jennifer Wachitsky from Weatherology joins us with the details on that. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, well, it looks like essentially a high pressure system is in control today. So like you said, kind of a quiet start to the work week, not too much going on overall. Mid-50s and cloudy for most of the day, low 50s and sunny around Amory and Baldwin. Fairly similar overall tomorrow, slightly warmer, highs in the mid-50s to right around about 60 degrees for everyone. Once again, sunny around Amory and Baldwin and cloudy for everyone else. Wednesday, we'll start seeing a chance for some rain showers rolling through across the board, cloudy and warmer as well, mid to low 60s for most of the northernmost portions of the listening areas, lingering in the upper 50s, and that's actually all going to be pretty average for this time of the year. Chance for rain again for everyone on Thursday, slightly cooler compared to Wednesday, mid-50s to ride around about 60. Friday looks like at least a slight chance for rain showers for everyone, except around Oshkosh, Wausau, and Wisconsin Rapids, mid to upper 50s expected once again for afternoon highs. Slightly cooler in the low 50s right around about Wausau on Friday.
I asked you on Friday morning if this thing had been a winter storm, what would it do? And you said it would be probably, you know, 10 inches of snow. And I was driving through the tail end of it yesterday coming back from Michigan. And the way the rain was falling, it felt like if it had been a few degrees colder, that you totally saw how this thing would have been just a massive and ugly winter storm. In that sense, from a calendar standpoint, I guess I'm really glad we dodged a bullet on that one.
Yeah, absolutely. I do remember, I think it was last year, there was a little bit of snow for parts of Wisconsin yesterday or on Sunday, just a year ago, just a little coating. So, I mean, we're mm-hmm. not there yet.
Oh, no. Again, preview of coming attractions. Jennifer, thanks so much. Have a great Monday.
You too.
All right, let's get back with Selena Heller here, Up North News reporter, talk about some of the things that she's working on. Oh, I almost forgot. I've got sports to do. So do you want to help with sports, or do you just want to, you and Whiskers want to hang out over there? Well, you're the one. I was saying the Packers are getting back in action here. I didn't know who they were playing this. I didn't know when they were playing. I'm guessing you
right.
didn't.
No, so we both
had to look it up over the commercial break. The Packers will be in Denver taking on the Broncos Sunday at 3:25, so a later game on Sunday afternoon. The baseball playoffs are down to their final four, the two teams in the American League Championship Series, the two teams in the National League Championship Series. The National League Championship Series begins tonight. The Arizona Diamondbacks are in Philadelphia to take on the Phillies in Game 1 with birthday boy Bryce Harper. The American League Championship Series got started last night. Houston blanked the Texas Rangers 2-0 to take a 1-0 lead in that best-of-7 series. The Badger football team lost to Iowa 15-6. Quarterback Tanner Mordecai is out with a hand injury. They will be at Illinois next Saturday. We'll talk more with Terry Bell later this hour about the UW volleyball team. The women there are off to their best start in school history. We'll tell you just how good that's getting when we visit with Terry just a little bit later on. So there's your sports update at 7:19. So Selena was telling us before the break about the elk that just happens to be passing through in Jackson County. At least we hope so. It seems, to me, it doesn't seem like this long ago, but it's been a little bit while now since elk were even reintroduced to northern Wisconsin. I don't know if you ever covered any of those stories when you were working at TV 13 in Eau Claire. I know when I was working at Wax Radio back in the mid-90s, you know, it was still a big deal that the first few elk had been reintroduced in the Clam Lake area. And It is, I guess it's really nice to see the way that the herd has grown and spread again. Not that you want to be feeding one of them all winter, but this is one of those positive developments when you look at, again, trying to get nature back in balance after, nearly a century of settlement that wasn't always good to some of the native species, shall we say.
Right. The population has really grown, and I think they've been kind of welcomed in that area and in a lot of areas in the state that they've been reintroduced. So it's a nice growing population, and they've, I think for the most part, been kind of sticking to their forest areas, some meandering out. And I know there have been some other crop issues sometimes, but for the most part, I think it's a successful program by the DNR.
Oh, yeah, certainly nothing like what farmers have to deal with, you know, for deer when on those years when you don't have a really good harvest during the deer season. And that takes us to National Farmers Day, which was last week. And we played a video that included Paul Harvey talking about the poem that he wrote, Then God Made a Farmer. And I say video because it was a video tribute to your father that somebody put together with Paul Harvey's poem underneath. And it was, again, it was a very positive thing to see how many people were watching it, liking it, sharing it.
Right. I mean, those words are so, they draw out so many emotions. If you listen to So God Made a Farmer and just the hard work to appreciate all the farmers that they do every single day. Personally, my dad, he was a beef farmer and we had crops and horses and pigs, but also he had a full-time job on top of it. He first worked at the Jackson County Iron Mine. So he worked hard during the day. He did chores in the morning, went to work and came back and did all the field work. And so that's kind of the work ethic of farmers as we know and love across the state. And so that video is really part of narration is part of our culture in Wisconsin and resonates with so many people. And it was kind of just crazy to think about that. I think 240,000 people watched that video online that's on our page right now.
That's really nice. And again, good for people to, especially folks who are in urban areas, to have that appreciation for our farmers. This is also Hispanic Heritage Month. And so there's no shortage of ways to market. One of the ways that when we have various months or awareness weeks is to remind people to maybe get out of their routine and maybe patronize a business that you haven't seen or haven't been to very much. And in the case of Hispanic Heritage Month, that could certainly be said about Hispanic-owned businesses in hometowns all over Wisconsin.
Oh my goodness, there are so many. And I think we can recognize the Mexican restaurants easily. And those are oftentimes owned by Hispanic Americans. And so that's easy enough to frequent, but there are others. In Eau Claire, a bakery just opened by a few different families in the area, and they have really delicious items. And so you kind of want to patronize those businesses. There's going to be a story coming out today of a guy in Madison who does fruit art. So he carves watermelons and things, and they're so neat. So you kind of got to think about all the different things that they contribute to.
Oh, without a doubt. So you can look for that. Look for that story coming up at Up North News on the website and in our social media posts as well. I don't recall you ever saying that you were in any of the crowds at any Taylor Swift concert, but am I wrong? Have you been to a show in the past? Maybe
I have not. I'm not a Swiftie.
Not a Swiftie.
Okay. Nope. Emery loves Shake It Off, so we have to play that quite frequently. Mm-hmm. But there's a girl in Eau Claire at the Micon Cinemas. She painted this incredible mural for the Eras Tour movie, and it's all different faces of Taylor Swift, and it's so incredible. It took her 14 hours to create, and she's very talented, and she paints these murals for movies all of the time, and so very neat.
Oh, that is very nice. But are you going to go see the movie at some point to see the Taylor Swift concert tour?
I probably will. My niece went to it over the weekend, so you have to get tickets early, and it's going to be packed for weeks to come. They kind of predict, I think, $96 million was the box office this weekend, so it kind of did records for a concert movie, so she's now got that accolade to her name, too.
Hold on a minute. Did you say 90 how much? What?
90, let's see. Yep. Raked in about $96 million in the box office in the United States and Canada.
Holy cow. That's, uh-huh. I mean, what Hollywood studio wouldn't love that? Yeah, I'm looking at it right there. $97 million. The number two movie was The Exorcist Believer, down at $45 million. Paw Patrol still bringing in $50 million. Gross. You know? Oh, but that, oh, no, I'm sorry. That's The Exorcist brought in $44 million total. For Taylor Swift, it's $97 million total because it was $97 million in the opening weekend.
Just the weekend.
and just $11 million for The Exorcist, $7 million for Paw Patrol, $6 million for Saw, $4 million for The Creator, and all these other scary. I'm not going to see any of these movies. These horror movies and things, but clearly.
We'll probably go to Paw Patrol. I'll report back on that.
Oh, without a doubt. I've got grandsons who, if I had the time, we would totally be doing that. And I see Hocus Pocus is on here. Is that the, do they do a remake, or is that the original that's in theaters for Halloween?
Don't know if that's out. A year ago, the second one came out, but
maybe that's it. I just know my daughters were big into Hocus Pocus, the original one, when it came out. So I didn't know if it was coming in back in theaters. And look at this, the Barbie movie and Oppenheimer are still in the top 15. You know, movies.
Oh, hanging on. Holy cow.
Oh, yeah. Now, in both cases, it was less than $1 million that they took in over the weekend. But let's see. Oppenheimer's now up to $323 million gross. And Barbie, $635 million that movie has made at the box office since it opened.
Well, we went to that twice.
Well, that's why, you know, it's people like you who are driving up those numbers. Well, because there was also the movie about child trafficking. It was a kind of controversial. There were all these claims that all these tickets were sold, but then the theaters were empty. So it was just a case of groups that were buying up the tickets, but not necessarily going. That could definitely not be said about Barbie, and I'm sure that cannot be said about the Taylor Swift concert tour movie.
No. And I think in large part, it's because for those who can't get tickets to the concert, or it's kind of priced out of it, actually, you know, really, this is just like going to a concert. And that's kind of why she wanted to make it. So,
well, and you can really do that today because of the technology. I mean, the theater screens and the surround sound systems are such that, again, you're not at the concert, but you're not going to. You're as good as you're ever going to get when it comes to a concert film, you know, that makes you feel like the experience.
Right. And it does look like it. You know, I've seen clips and it looks like you're at her concert. So it works.
Yeah, no doubt it does. All right. Selena Heller's work can be found over at upnorthnewswi.com, upnorthnewswi on social media. Look for all of her posts there. And we visit with her on Monday mornings to find out more. Selena, thanks so much. We'll talk to you a little later on.
Thank you. Have a great day.
All right. You too. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Cabby Hong, an educator who's going to talk about controversial books in schools, that these are things that don't, you know, appear willy-nilly, that educators have a process when it comes to age-appropriate material. And so we'll learn much more from an educator standpoint coming up right after this break. This is Up North News Radio. We'll be right back. As mentioned earlier during today's history lesson and music break, Stevie Wonder's Songs in the Key of Life was the number one album this day in 1976. Cabby Hong was a 2022 National Teacher of the Year, an English teacher at Verona Area High School. Some 20 years of teaching experience, a National Board Certified Teacher, has given presentations for the New York Times on argumentative writing, has received awards from Stanford University and the University of Chicago for his effectiveness as a teacher, came highly recommended as a good person to talk to about the experience and the process of choosing the literature that we talk about in our classrooms, the books that are in our school libraries. And so we are very thrilled that Cabby Hong is willing and able to join us on what's going to be a busy day of parent-teacher conferences, he tells me today. Cabby, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
It's so nice to have you here. Thank you so much for doing it, especially, like you said, on a long day. But, you know, I actually want to start with that before we get to the books themselves. Part of what we have had to hear in the political discourse over the past, I don't know, 5 years or so, is this thing about so-called, you know, parents' rights and parent involvement. And as we've said many times on this show, and I'm sure you have in your life as well, there's never been a shortage of ways for parents to become more involved in their kids' school activities or for adults overall to learn more about what's happening in their schools. It doesn't sound to me like you're running any kind of a secret society over there.
No, not at all. In fact, you know, most teachers, if you talk to them, would love to have parents involved and coming in, and absolutely are open to sharing our curriculum and sharing our readings. In fact, we actively talk about how we would love to have our parents reading the books that their children are reading as well. So, absolutely.
So when we hear a lot that is said now about, you know, book bans or just controversies about books, what I typically get from the talking points is that somehow these controversial books with controversial themes mm-hmm. just either magically showed up on the shelves or in the classrooms with virtually no oversight. It caught people off guard, or that there were even more nefarious purposes for putting, you know, what they view as pornographic material on the shelves. And I want to get to the process. And I know that it's not, you know, one single process, but for a teacher or a group of teachers to decide that this book works in this curriculum, or mm-hmm. for somebody in a school library to determine that, you know, this is a book that should go on the shelves or should be in the library but behind a desk. Again, there are processes. These things don't happen out of the blue, I don't think.
No, absolutely not. In fact, the first step in the process is really for teachers to think about our kids and how best to meet their needs. We also then take a look at the overall goals for the course. And then we look at the state standards. And if you look at the Wisconsin state standards, it's very clear One of them specifically states that you need to explain how an author's geographic location, identity, and culture affect perspective. Act 31 in Wisconsin also requires that the identities of Black Americans, Hispanic, and Native Americans is also represented in the curriculum itself. So, you know, as teachers, we absolutely take a look at the state standards, we look at the state statutes, but we also look at best practices. And best practices really say that we need a diverse curriculum representing multiple perspectives because we live in a diverse world. And so to best prepare our kids for the diverse world that they're going to be entering in, they need to develop skills in terms of empathy, looking at the world through someone else's eyes. And that's the beautiful thing about books and why books are so incredibly powerful.
And it is not so much, I sense, about, you know, telling a child, a student, what to think, so much as the exposure to diversity of experiences builds those critical thinking skills and helps them, you know, reach conclusions on how they see other people, how they see events in history. And again, that is in no way, shape, or form indoctrination, unless by indoctrination you mean teaching facts. But we're not even talking about facts when we're talking about just different perspectives from people who may not look like you or have the same background as you, right?
Well, absolutely. I mean, anyone that's worked with or interacted with a teenager knows you can't make a teenager really do anything that they don't want to. And so I think, you know, when you look at what the world that kids are living in nowadays, it's a very diverse world. They look at the media that they consume. So much of the media now is represented by, you know, young women as action heroes or a young Puerto Rican man playing Alexander Hamilton in a musical. And so when you think about like the diverse world that our kids are in, our curriculum really needs to reflect that.
I want to turn now to part of the topic that might be a little uncomfortable for some folks. So I'm going to let you know ahead of time. We're going to talk about the matters related to sexuality and gender. Because again, when it comes to, books and materials that are made available, the most important reason I wanted to have somebody like you on was because when we've talked in the past about, Banned Books Week and things like that, most of the emails that I get from people who disagree with the premise, almost all of them say, well, we need this because somebody has to watch out for pornography, that this is nothing but pornography in our classrooms. This is nothing but pornography in our libraries, and somebody should be watching out for that, which to me sounds like somebody else getting to define what pornography is. When we get to matters of sexuality and gender, I would have to think that not only are you already taking a process that you're already using for history, for diversity, for literature, but you're ramping it up a degree to make sure that whatever materials are there aren't pornographic so much as what? Educational, experiential? How do we define that?
Well, I think you have to understand that these book bans are never about pornography. The American Library Association recently reported that in 2023, almost half of their book challenges have occurred in public libraries, not school libraries. So these extremists who want to ban books, they want to ban books and ideas and identities, not just for kids, but for all people. And I think that's the most disturbing part, is really the attacks on our public library system as well. And when you look at the books that they consider to be pornographic, these are books that have been on library shelves and school curriculums oftentimes for decades. You know, one of the books is Beloved by Toni Morrison. It's a Pulitzer Prize-winning book written by a Nobel Prize-winning author. And yet somehow this book is considered to be pornographic now. And when you really look at the history of book banning in our country, these activists and extremists, what they're doing is nothing new. I mean, we've had book bans since the very beginning of our country. And oftentimes the language that's been used is trying to protect children from pornography. And unfortunately, when you look at the authors that are being banned, they disproportionately are authors of color. and members of the LGBTQ community. And so really, the issue is not pornography, because when you look at a lot of the, quote, classic literature pieces, for example, like Canterbury Tales, or when you look at, like, for examples of Shakespeare or some of the Greek mythology, they are full of sexual material. And yet none of those seemingly are challenged as being pornographic. And so when you really look at the target for many of these extremists, it's really about erasing the identities of marginalized groups and groups that they're just not comfortable hearing from.
And then we get into the notion of young people who are wrestling with their own identities and are in need of answers or of somebody to talk to or material that will provide them with information, because as much as some people would love to believe in the universal benevolence of parents, fact of the matter is there are plenty of students who either don't get support from their parents when questions need to be answered. There may be neglectful or even abusive situations where a teacher or somebody in that classroom, you know, is the role model. And some people don't like to hear that, but that just is the case. And so how important is it that there are materials available, even if not on a shelf, but at least able to hand to a student, to say, you may have questions about something, here is something of a certain degree of quality that has been reviewed that could address your questions or concerns. How important is that as opposed to getting answers off the street or off the internet?
Well, Pat, I'll start with a very personal example. When I was growing up, I grew up in a small rural community, about 5,000 people, and I hated being Asian American. And I hated being Asian American because I never saw anyone that looked like me in any of the TV shows or movies or books that I consumed. And I really longed to have somebody that looked like me in a book that I would have read in a high school. I didn't even know Asian Americans wrote literature until I graduated from college and I read Joy Luck Club by Amy Tan on my own. It wasn't even part of a school curriculum. And so for so many kids, books are not only mirrors where they can kind of see themselves, but there are also windows into someone else's culture or perspectives. And that's why books are so incredibly powerful and they can be incredibly affirming. For many of our kids, they are struggling with their own sense of identity. Think back to when you were a teenager and you're dealing with, like, who am I? And for so many of our marginalized kids, especially our kids of color and especially our LGBTQ kids, you know, seeing themselves affirmed in a book is something that is incredibly life-saving for many kids. Because we know about the mental health toll that especially our LGBTQ kids have in terms of not being able to see that their identities are being affirmed. And I can't, as teachers, for so many of us, you know, we are trying to meet the needs of our kids, the kids that are in front of us, and making sure that all kids feel welcome in our classroom.
And Cabby, to bring it full circle back to the parents then, for parents and adults in a district perhaps who have a concern, maybe they've either seen something that their child is potentially going to be reading or working on or hear about it secondhand, there are steps short of showing up at a school board meeting with torches and pitchforks, right? What are the best steps for parents to do when they have questions or concerns?
Well, I would start, first of all, with reading the book. I've been teaching for 23 years, and I can count on one hand the number of parents who have opted out of a book that we are teaching in class. And the very first question that I always ask parents is, have you read the book? Because a lot of times parents will be concerned because of rumors that they've heard about the book, or someone will pull one quote out of context. And so I always ask the parents, have you read the book? And usually after they've read the book, they understand the totality of the book itself. And usually they're okay with it. But even if a parent isn't okay with that, is totally appropriate. You know, and we will make an accommodation. We will find an alternative text. We will work with that parent to make sure that their child feels comfortable and then they feel comfortable as well. And so there's always been a process in every school that I've worked in to provide options for parents and for kids who may not want to read a book or feel like their child is ready to have these conversations. But I think what's most alarming about a lot of these extremists is that they don't want any child reading a book. And I think that is one area that I'm really offended as an English teacher, that it's okay for you to say that, you know, I don't want my child reading this book. But for you to say no child should be reading this book, I think is deeply troubling, because there's nothing more un-American than a book ban.
Cabby Hong is Wisconsin's 2022 Teacher of the Year from Verona Area High School. Cabby, this was a real honor. Thank you so much for coming in and giving us much more detail from a responsible educator standpoint. It is greatly appreciated. Have a great day.
Thank you, Pat. Appreciate it.
You bet. When we come back, Civic Media News Director Terry Bell will join us with three things you need to know to start the week as we can get our work week reset on this Monday morning, October 16th. Then coming up next is Earl Ingram in Waukesha, Green Bay, and Racine, Stu Daniels in the Chippewa Valley, La Crosse, Hayward, and Oshkosh, Chad Holmes in Wausau, Stephanie Miller in Madison, James and the Gang in Wisconsin Rapids, so much more still ahead across the Civic Media Radio Network on this Monday. Back to wrap up our conversation right after this. Terry Bell is the news director of this here Civic Media Radio Network, and he joins us each week on Mondays to talk about three things you should know to start the week, kind of a mental reset on headlines. We've covered some of the news stories here throughout the past couple of hours, but this is a good chance in one fell swoop to see what should be at the top of your level of awareness when it comes to news this week. Terry, how are you?
Good morning, Pat. I'm great. How are you?
Very good. We're going to get to those stories in just a sec, but I know of no bigger fan in my circle of UW women's volleyball than you. Yeah. And to see that they are now off to a best ever 17-0 start is tells you we've got quite the national juggernaut going on here.
We really do. It's really exciting to watch. They rolled through a couple of opponents this weekend, Maryland and Rutgers, which was not a big surprise. But I think one thing to take away from that that's very encouraging is we were without Devin Robinson all weekend. And that's, she's one of our best players. And other players stepped up and responded, Diana Spreck in particular. And yeah, the Badgers have won, not only have they won 17 games and lost none so far this year, but they have won 27 straight sets. So you have anywhere from 3 to 5 sets in a volleyball match. They haven't lost a set in 27 sets. I think you would have to go all the way back to the Florida batch, which was like getting on to close to a month ago.
Yeah, you're right. I'm scrolling up. Oh yeah, it was against Florida on September 17th, so it's been about a month, and they took it three matches to two in Florida, you know, on the road. Mm-hmm. And before that, it was 3-1 over Marquette in Milwaukee. And yeah, they've just been rattling off set after set since then. They do Ohio State at the Fieldhouse this Wednesday, 7 p.m. on the Big Ten Network. And then Saturday, they will be in Lincoln to take on number 2-ranked Nebraska, also on the Big Ten Network. That's going to be something to watch.
That'll be the match of the year so far. Number one versus number two. And yeah, two undefeated teams, which are just juggernauts right now. It's going to be a real battle.
So look for that this week from the Badger volleyball women. Mm-hmm. Turning to things you need to know this week. Obviously, the war between Israel and Hamas is you know, center stage. It's going to be for some time to come here where, you know, I grew up, you and I grew up with a much, you know, there's Cold War, there's hot war. We grew up in hotter times where there was, you know, war in Lebanon and there was, you know, the Yom Kippur War and all that. And things have been relatively quiet by comparison. But I sense we're in an era now where it's going to stay hot for a little while here.
And this particular crisis is looking to amp up soon. Israel is poised to launch a ground invasion of Gaza. So this is going to turn into a full-blown ground war pretty soon. So far, we had a terrorist attack and missile attack followed by other reactions, cutting off water to Gaza, which has now been reversed. And it'll be a full-blown ground war soon, it's looking.
And that's just what's happening on the ground. What's happening with all of the rest of us in the world observing it, commenting on it? It has been much more difficult to scroll through social media and get news versus opinion versus misinformation. You certainly see something erupting here. What's erupting is a view that says, look, we're not here to tell you the Israeli government is right about everything. We're not here to tell you that all Palestinians are sympathetic to Hamas. We're just here to say there are going to be there have already been tremendous civilian casualties on both sides, and can more be done to, you know, try to reduce that or even eliminate it. And yet even that side emerges and people say, oh, so you're standing up with the Israelis, or oh, you're standing up with the Palestinians. And it feels like lose-lose, but I don't think it's a bad thing that people are speaking up and saying, why don't we try to stem the number of children being killed in a war?
That would seem to be a pretty
does not
easy
seem controversial to me.
To take.
Know?
Yes, yeah. It would. But yeah, it's a difficult thing to talk about because it is so complicated on some respects, but so simple, as you just put it. It ought to be. We ought to be able to find some middle ground. We're having difficulty responding as a nation. Due to the holdup with the speakership in the House on the Senate.
Which takes us right to our next thing you should know, that the speaker seat is still open. And I don't know, there's a vote scheduled tomorrow, but I don't think this thing is wrapping up tomorrow. At least there's no indication of it.
Not with Jim Jordan as the front runner, which he is now at this point. But he doesn't even have enough votes in the Republican caucus. Too many moderates don't like the idea of a speaker Jim Jordan. Republicans can only lose 4 of their own votes in order to elect the speaker. So they have their work cut out for them. Apparently, they've been talking about it all weekend, trying to make a case to moderates that they ought to vote for Jim Jordan. I'm not aware of any other candidate who has emerged other than Jordan since Steve Scalise dropped out. So this is where we are at. Jordan wants a vote tomorrow because he thinks that will pressure moderates to come over to his side. We'll see if that's an effective strategy or not.
Oh, I don't think that's where I'm already seeing headlines that say it's backfiring, that moderates are saying you're not going to jam us with this. And it is, I don't know that I've ever seen such a case in political news of the saying, the tail wagging the dog, because we're talking about roughly 8 House Republicans who, instead of them being pressured to support a moderate, are trying to pressure all of these moderates to support, you know, one of their own on the fringe. I don't think I've ever seen anything like it to this degree in politics anyplace.
Yeah, well, it's the new paradigm, I guess, is that, you know, politics used to be the art of the half loaf, of getting what you can now, and now compromise is seen as a dirty word, and it's all or nothing in the minds of many people who are in the public arena now.
Oh, especially when you have access to, you know, your own specially branded cable channel for that niche of an audience. It just makes it that much tougher. Compromise is seen as weakness, and so that's why this is something we may be following for a while. What may be wrapped up a lot faster, somewhat surprisingly to me, is that the Brewers stadium renovation, you know, state and local funding end of it, that bill has been modified and looks like it may get some wheels this week.
It passed in committee late last week, and it goes to the full assembly floor tomorrow, and it has widespread backing. The governor is behind this version. The county executive and the mayor in Milwaukee are behind this. So there appears to be very little to stop this bill from becoming the state bill that maintains American Family Field and keeps the Brewers in Milwaukee. It lessens the contribution from the local governments, being Milwaukee and Milwaukee County. It winterizes the ballpark. You'll see more things happening year-round if this becomes law, and it likely will. So, you know, this is a big development, and there was never any doubt that it was going to happen. As I've said on this show before in our conversations on Monday morning, this isn't Oakland where there's deep disagreement. Everybody, no matter where they're starting from,
exactly
wants the same outcome.
They want the Brewers to stay. Thanks, yep. Terry.
Thanks,
we'll see you tomorrow. Have a great day.